twin brothers from the Twin Cities talking twins.
Is she going willingly, or are you going to, like, drug her and stuff her in a sea bag?
Sexy woman 9875 wants to be my friend.
What happens in your bedroom stays in your bedroom.
The show that is you can lose. Talking twin brothers from the Twin Cities. Twins baseball talk to contact. Twin brothers from the Twin Cities. Twins baseball talk to contact. Talk to contact. Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Big Top. We have got a show and a half for you tonight. On board, we have the Pleiss brothers, ugly and uglier, Paul and E-Rolf, baseball pirate. Find them at E-Rolf. I am J double underscore corn. We are missing our good friend and colleague, Cody Christie, tonight. He has some sort of school-related function, and it was a tough call, but he chose the future generation of America over us. We'll give him grief about that next week. Boys, how the hell are you? I've been looking forward to this for a few days. Glad to be with you here.
Let me tell you, super pumped. Super pumped. It's been kind of a dead week in Twins territory.
Can I tell you how super pumped you sound? I mean, it's just oozing out. It's through my computers. I have to, like, wipe it off of my speakers. The ooze is just too thick.
Oh, that's that could be something else coming off of your computer.
Yeah. You know what I've been thinking about all week as we prepare for the podcast is I've been thinking about a name for a beer from the Deschutes Brewing Company that I just can't believe it hasn't been made yet. I think Deschutes should have a beer called Discourse. Because then it'll be Deschutes Discourse.
I love it, Eric. Oh, man, we're off to a good start tonight.
So, if you're listening out there in Bend, Oregon at the Deschutes Brewing Company, I'll take the assist on that one. So, yeah, I'm back. I'm back after a two-week, three-week, four-week delay. I haven't been on since the Christmas episode.
Where the hell have you been?
Well, you know, on the ice, in my room, crying, trying to imagine a world in which the Twins are a 500 baseball club. You know, it's that time of year, and I don't know if this happens to you guys. So when spring training comes, I move into full-on Twins optimism mode. So I'm so excited that baseball's back. Pitchers and catchers are reporting. Everybody is going to be great. And at the end of the season, you're just down on the Twins. Like, the Twins suck. They'll never be good again. Right now, it's that time of the year where my heart says it's time to be optimistic. And my brain says, the Twins suck, you moron. And so every time something happens, every move that's made or not made, I'm just internally conflicted with everything that happens.
Well, I'm sorry that you have to bear that demon. You know, we're here to help in any way that we possibly can. We're here for you, pal.
Eric, you guys, here's a question.
You feel the same way?
You want to be optimistic, and I guess my question is, I think last season the Twins had, like, scored, like, the seventh most runs in baseball, and they had the fifth best offense in the second half. So we're looking at a team that has some offensive upside. I think almost all of the regulars, 1 through 9 last year, had an OPS plus over 100, but nobody really spectacular. So I think we can expect maybe something similar in 2015 with a little bit of regression. So obviously the issue maybe that why you think the Twins are going to suck is because of their pitching staff. They went out, they addressed that need by bringing in Urban Santana, kind of rounding out the top front of that rotation with Hughes, Nolasco, Santana, and then with Gibson and one of any number of players in that fifth spot. So what does this team need to do for you to stay on that positive note?
Well, let me give you this, because you said the Twins, they had definitely had a good year offensively last year, but I'm just going to go through the projected starters, you know, 1 through 9. You tell me if it's going to be better or worse than last year as far as offense goes. Kurt Suzuki.
Worse.
Joe Mauer.
Better.
Brian Dozier.
Better. I think Brian Dozier is going to be similar.
Similar. Yeah, I'll go with similar.
Okay. So one better, one worse, one the same. Danny Santana.
Worse.
Trevor Plouffe.
Better.
I don't know. Trevor Plouffe had a really good year last year. I mean, you look at those numbers. He like led the league in doubles, or was like second in the league in doubles. He was played every day. He had one small stint on the DL. Other than that, he was out there every single day. He was acceptable defensively, even acceptable plus.
Yeah, I don't think he's better. Left field, Oswaldo Arcia.
Better.
I don't know, man. The injuries, learning a new position, the full 162. I don't know. I'll say better also.
Whoever plays center field, Aaron Hicks, Jordan Schaefer.
Can't be worse.
I mean,
but
Danny
Santana. Probably not better, right?
I mean, it's not going to be better than Danny Santana. I don't see how similar. I'll go similar.
Corey Hunter.
Compared to what?
Compared to what the Twins had last year in the corner. So compared to Josh Willingham and...
He'll be better than Josh Willingham. I think that's an upgrade over last season, but marginal.
Okay. So we have four guys are going to be better, three guys are going to be worse, two pushes. Then defense overall.
I think it's going to be... better.
How? I think it's also laughably worse.
You're changing Josh Willingham and turning it into Torrey Hunter for better or for worse. I don't know how much you're losing there. I mean, they're both. Josh Willingham is easily a terrible defender. Torrey Hunter maybe looks a little better, but the metrics tell you that he's awful. Oswaldo Arcia will still be out there. Whoever ends up manning center field for them is going to have to do at least an acceptable job, as Danny Santana was acceptable out there in center field last year, you know, learning a new position. So I think we're going to see at least that good of production from whoever's out there, and probably better. Trevor Plouffe, I think, will be solid. Eduardo Escobar or Danny Santana should give you solid to plus defense from shortstop. Brian Dozier is going to be Brian Dozier, and then Joe Mauer, I think, continues to get better at being a first baseman.
We did not touch on the DH spot or Vargas. I think that'll also be better.
And I think the catcher defense from Kurt Suzuki, I mean, I don't know that he's really great at that, but I expect him to be able to be the same. Maybe you lose a little bit if Josmel Pinto Beans is actually your backup and plays, you know, starts behind the dish once a week. There's a little bit of room for regression, but I don't see that the defense is markedly worse. It's just not any better.
Well, I think Danny Santana at shortstop is going to be worse than whatever you had from Eduardo Escobar and Nunez. And
if that's the case, then maybe they get to spring training and Paul Molitor says, you know what, we're putting Danny Santana out in center field because we've got nobody else to put out there, and he's going to have to be a center fielder again, and Eduardo Escobar is going to man the hole.
I think Santana is going to surprise you, Eric. I think he's got one mission during the offseason, and that's to get better defensively and take care of his body. I think he's going to be working double time in spring training with all the special instructors that they bring in. I think after he fields, you know, 500,000 ground balls at shortstop, I think he's going to be just fine.
So, but the other issue I have, so the guys that you thought would be better, Joe Mauer, Oswaldo Arcia, you know, I don't see them being significantly better. And Kurt Suzuki is probably going to be significantly worse than he was last year. Danny Santana is going to be significantly worse. You know, offensively, you might get a little uptick from Torrey Hunter, but I think altogether the offense is worse when you look at what happens with those guys. Phil Hughes is coming back down, but he'll offset that.
Before we move on to the pitching staff, do you think there'll be any pleasant surprises? I mean, whether it's Santana or Vargas or Arcia, I mean, do you think there's going to be an explosion or just a real coming out party? Even Sano, I mean, or Pinto, I mean, are we gonna have somebody who just bursts on the scene, like, you know, right away, or, you know, after a few weeks?
I think that we're not gonna see that because a lot of those guys burst onto the scene last year. I mean, if Danny Santana can hit 275, in his sophomore season, I think we consider that a win. I think Oswaldo Arcia, we could see him take a big step forward. In his limited playing time down in the Winter League, he still hasn't learned how to take a walk, which is still concerning. But I think we're going to see some progression from him. Hopefully, you can see him play, 120 games next year. I think that's the biggest thing to look for. And Kenny's Vargas, I think there's a question mark there because early in the season, he mashed a lot of taters. Looked like people were kind of figuring him out towards the end of the season. And with the whole offseason to create a book on him, I'm a little bit curious what's going to happen with Kenny's Vargas. You know, is he a candidate to get sent back down to AAA maybe to start the season? And a guy like Josmo Pinto does a little more DHing to start the season.
I'm with you on that. I could see that happening, Paul. I really could, especially if Sano applies any sort of pressure.
Remember, Sano hasn't played above AA, and I know that the Twins have shown that they're willing to bring someone up from AA, but he didn't play at all last year. And so I don't know how much pressure he can legitimately apply. I mean, we saw Eddie Rosario have an awesome fall league last year down in Arizona, but I don't think the Twins are by any means ready to anoint him, and I think it's likely a guy like Rosario starts again in AA. I mean, so those guys, while I think they're close, like within a season of coming up, I don't think any of the big-name prospects for the Twins are really pressing to get a spot out of spring training.
There might be one. I stress the word might. What do you guys think about Polanco as a sleeper on the 25?
Where? What? There's no room for him. I don't see the advantage of bringing him up, a guy that has so little experience, I mean, even at a AA and above level.
Yeah, Polanco was a beneficiary of poor roster construction last year, I think. You know, I mean, the Twins had such limited depth at shortstop when you were playing Santana in center field because you were dealing with that issue. You know, I mean, what? Eduardo Nunez had some time at shortstop. I mean, that's not a good idea. Right? I mean, so, Polanco came up and filled a need, but if he comes back up this year, it'll be in September. Or a disaster happens, and I'm hoping it's September because the disaster is not what the Twins need right now. I think back to my original point. I just don't think the offense gets better than it was last year. If it's as good as it was last year, great. But I think the Twins' offense for a long time, especially before the All-Star break, that was the reason that they managed to stay around 500. And in the second half, yes, their pitching went in the tank, but also their offense, didn't do the same in the first half. So it got better when you added some pieces, but the guys that you're really counting on, Danny Santana and Kenny Vargas, they're coming back to earth. They're not going to do it again. Vargas had 53 games last year. He had less than 250 plate appearances. So this is a guy that, his numbers say something, but I'd much rather have Pinto in that position to begin the year.
I hear what you're saying, Eric. And it's
so see me. I'm waffling back and forth. I'm optimistic, but I don't like it.
I do hear what you're saying, but it sounds a lot better when you look at it like this: 1 through 9, Dozier, Maurer, Plouffe, Arcia, Vargas, Hunter, Hicks, Suzuki. I mean, that sounds a lot better than when you break it down. Better, worse, and everybody's going to be similar or worse. When you look at Dozier, Maurer, Plouffe, Arcia, Vargas, Hunter, Hicks, Suzuki, or something similar, that's a pretty strong lineup.
I think we could all agree, except for maybe Eric, because he's Mr. Pessimist this winter. The cold is getting to his brain. It's sucking the joy out of him, just like the cold sucks the heat out of you. The offense is going to be maybe not as good as it was last year, but it's going to be above average, I think. It's going to be better than league average.
Yeah, I think it will be above average.
But when we look at the pitching staff, what I talked about at the beginning of the show, the Twins upgraded with Urban Santana. They're bringing in stocking stuffer Tim Stoffner. But where is this pitching staff going to get better? Because I'm not less worried about the rotation right now, which is a scary thing to say, than I am about the bullpen. Because you got Perkins and you got Casey Fien, and then what? And now I don't even know if Casey Fien is really – we saw last year he started to turn back into a pumpkin. So the bullpen is really bothering me right now, especially
I mean, don't even get to the bullpen yet. Hughes, Gibson, and Alasco are really the only three people who are holding over in that starting rotation from the main guys last year. Don't forget, these are the Twins that gave 34 starts to a combination of Kevin Correa and Johan Pino, right? I mean, we also had Sam Deduno, Anthony Swarzak, you know, those guys starting games, Logan Darnell. You know, I mean, there's guys starting games that have no business. Chris Johnson, you remember that? Three starts for Chris Johnson. So, you know, the Twins, they're pitching. The depth is going to be a strength this year if they can find a way to keep all of their fifth starters on the 40-man roster, right? Because we've talked about that roster crunch in the starting position. Hughes, Gibson, Nolasco, Santana. Then you've got Pelfrey, you got Malone, you got Meyer, you got May. You know, you got all these guys stacked up there in that fifth spot. So the Twins can handle some injury and not have to go Johan Pino, not have to deal with a Kevin Correa, not have to go, you know, Chris Johnson and the like. So they have some room to be able to handle a couple injuries, and that's going to serve them well. And the pitching staff overall starting is definitely going to be better, even with Hughes regressing. But Nolasco has to be better. Santana comes in and I think instantly becomes the second best pitcher on this rotation. So it makes everyone better having him here. But Paul, you're right. That bullpen, Glenn Perkins is a huge question mark. His velocity was down last year. He had that forearm strain, forearm pain, whatever it is. Whenever you start hearing about forearm strains and nerves and all that kind of stuff, it just screams elbow at you. And for a guy whose bread and butter is pumping him 95-plus from the left side, if he's not at 95-plus, the platoon advantage is a dangerous thing from your pitcher. And if he's not fully healthy the whole time, they could be in trouble at the back of that bullpen.
I've been thinking since last week about the number 425. 425 is the number that Paul threw out there for a staff ERA last week. I think the Twins are going to be at 425 or maybe 427 or 418 or something like that. I think it's realistic. I don't think this starting rotation is better. I think this starting rotation is way better. And I don't understand, you know, everybody's building in and factoring in this huge regression. Let's remember, I think 2013 was the off year for Hughes. This is a former All-Star out of New York who had, maybe call it two bad years, 2012, 2013, comes back last year, back to form. I think we're going to see something closer to the Hughes we saw last year than we did in 2013. So as far as Perkins, you know, I share all those similar thoughts that you do, Derek. Perkins does worry me. I also think he's been overused a little bit. And I also think every time he goes out there, he's trying to throw the ball as hard as he can. It could be dangerous. I think that he's going to come back strong. He hasn't played any winter ball. He didn't go on that Japan trip. He didn't do any of that stuff. All he's been doing is resting that left arm. So we talked a little bit about the keystone Perkins provides the Twins bullpen and what I echo your thoughts, Eric.
Let me just quiz you guys real quick. What do you think was the average ERA for all pitchers in baseball last year? Throw everyone together, starters, relievers, everyone.
I don't know. I'd probably say.
I would say right around 4.25.
I'd say like 4.5, 4.6.
3.74.
Okay.
So a 4.25.
That's what I want from the starting rotation.
So, it's tough. I'm trying to see if I can. Yeah, so first, from the starting rotation, the splits are a 3.82 for average starters last year.
Well,
so you're still pretty far off.
And what was the Twins' ERA?
Yeah, but last year it was like 4.67, I think, for the five main guys. I'd have to do a little bit of math to figure out what it is for all of the starters, but it wasn't pretty. So when I'm saying I'm looking for 4.25, I think that's a marked improvement from where they were last season. And with an offense that we already just got done talking about, I think you can get away with having some guys that aren't quite up to a league average pitching staff.
That shit makes sense to me. That's where I'm leaning toward, too.
And so I understand that 4-2-5, Eric, may not be anything to get excited about, but for a Twins team that's been had an awful starting pitching for the last 4 years, I think getting to a 4-2-5 staff ERA coupled with a good offense is going to put this team a lot closer to 500, and it's going to be a lot more fun to watch.
And I also think part of the reason why we saw some bullpen ineffectiveness from the back end forward last year was because these starters were – I mean, some of them were getting knocked out in the first, second, third inning. It didn't happen 2 or 3 times. It happened like 10 or 12 times. And so then you're putting that pressure on your bullpen, and it just messes up all the dominoes moving forward. So in both improving the ERA and the number of quality starts, I think go hand in hand and will go a long way toward buffering the win column.
I like it.
I don't know. I like it. Okay, so I just looked it up.
The Twins, the starting pitcher's ERA for last year for the Twins was 5.06. So getting down to 4-2-5, that, you know, that's 3/4 of a run better. I think that that makes this team a lot better. Yep. I think that's so maybe 4-2-5 still leaves them with a long way to go before they're a team that can be a division contender, a playoff contender, a World Series contender. But I think that's a giant baby step for this team in 2015.
And I think Hughes will certainly be under 4-2-5. I think Santana will certainly be under 4-2-5. I think Gibson should be under 4-2-5. So then you're really only looking at like Nolasco and May or Nolasco, right, Meyer,
and
May.
And when you look at Phil Hughes, he still had a 3.52 ERA on the season. And I think if you look at his splits, his second half, I believe, was markedly better than his first half, because I think he had a 4 ERA going into the break. Him and Gibson were kind of had dueling ERAs there. And so when Eric's talking about some regression for Phil Hughes, I think it's going to be better than what – I think even with some regression from how great he was eliminating walks last year, I think we're still going to see a very good Phil Hughes in 2015.
Oh, yeah, a very good one. But, I mean – he was the only Twins starter last year to have an ERA under 4-2-5.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not arguing with you here.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a long way to go, but it's not nearly far enough to get me excited.
It's just like that going through the lineup. Now, just close your eyes for a second, dude, and Santana, Hughes, Nolasco, Gibson, May. That is a legit starting rotation. I'll go to war with that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jay, I think the more and more Twins news I hear this offseason, the less and less likely I feel that it is that Trevor May is going to have that number 5 spot coming out of spring training. I listened to Mike Berardino talk on a couple of different podcasts this week, and it really sounds like the Twins, or at least what Berardino is hearing, is that it's going to be Pelfrey or Malone, one of those guys in that 5th spot way before.
I've been saying that
Trevor
all
May.
Winter.
And
guys, hold on. Just hold.
Out of spring training, maybe. Yep.
Yes, out of spring training.
When you
training.
Get to the end of the year, it's going to be different. But out of spring training, Pelfrey is going to be given every opportunity to hang himself.
And I think one of the things that Mike Berardino talked about was sometimes when you're looking at a prospect list, sometimes you kind of group guys together that maybe don't belong together. Because as long as I can remember, Trevor May and Alex Meyer in Twins lore have been linked together as, you know, coming up through the system, going to be great pitchers for the teams. But I think that there's a significant difference between the upside of Trevor May and Alex Meyer. And so I think while last year we saw Trevor May kind of move past Alex Meyer, more because he had a great season and was able to stay healthy, I think we still need to pump the brakes, me more than anyone else, but we need to pump the brakes a little bit on dreaming on Trevor May, even though I don't want to.
Go ahead, Eric.
But I was going to say, Trevor May's upside is there if he stays in the starting rotation. You know, that's the big concern with May is, can he continue to be a starter? You know, and we're now starting to hear the same type of concerns about Alex Meyer. Maybe he turns into a big guy closer, right? Because he's had these shoulder problems. He also hasn't been able to handle the fatigue that comes along with pitching even a full season minor league. You know, so he might be a guy that ends up there. And when you talk about Trevor May, what his upside is, you know, we saw when he had that fantastic game in there. We saw what he had. He had 10 strikeouts and no walks. You know, and that was in six innings, right?
And that came after an outing where he went like an inning and a third and gave up eight runs, and everybody was, you know, and then he comes out the next, and that bounce back is what did it for me.
Well, and you're confusing the facts a little bit, because the first two outings he had two innings and then two and a third, and then he pitched at least four innings the rest of the way. That 10 strikeout game kind of came in the string of he pitched five innings, six innings, four and two thirds, and then six to end the year. So a six inning start there on September 14th was the 10 strikeout, no walk performance that he had. And it was good. It was 93 pitches, so relatively economical. I think if he was a guy that had been, you know, with the team the whole year, they would have let him go out there and pitch the seventh inning. He's a guy that the upside is there. He is, and who knows what he did this winter. All these guys are working their asses off this winter, you know, especially these young guys. They're hungry. They want to do it, you know. So I think Trevor May got a taste of that. You know, we've talked to that guy a couple of times. He's a cerebral guy. You know, we've talked to him. He says he goes out there, he makes every pitch, and that's all he thinks about is just the next pitch. Forget the bad. Think about the good. I think what he saw when he has worked with Phil Hughes this year, you know, a guy that's not afraid to just pound the strike zone. Trevor May has the stuff to do that. And if he can throw strikes, 10 strikeouts is not, you know, something that he's going to do every week. But I would imagine, you know, one out of seven starts, he might be able to do something like that if he has the confidence. And we saw him when he lost his confidence last year. Oh, brother, did he lose it? You know, those first two starts were tough. Cruise long, disaster. And he's got to work through that. And he's not a young guy by baseball terms, but he's a young guy in terms of experience. And he still retains his rookie eligibility going into next year. Yeah. So as much as we got out of 10 starts from him, you know, still a lot for him to do.
Jay is so fortunate tonight that Eric just made my whole case for me. If you guys think for one second that Mike Pelfrey or Tommy Malone is going to stand in the way of Trevor May's development and stymie a potential, you know, long-term starting pitcher for the Twins, I think this was a plant from the front office. Bernardino got duped. It's a plant to get Trevor May. It's a plant to get Trevor May motivated. The front office and the manager don't want him to think that the job is his going into spring training, that he's going to have to fight and work for it.
Jay, I think this conspiracy goes it's a lot further than the front office. I mean, we're talking aliens, the president, the U.S. Army is involved.
9/11.
This is the United Nations.
Tied to 9/11, I guarantee it.
There is no bleeping way that Mike Pelfrey or Tommy Malone is going to get a starting rotation spot ahead of Trevor May unless there's our extenuating circumstances. It's just simply not going to
happen. 5.5 million extenuating circumstances in the case of Mike Pelfrey.
Okay, see, that does not matter.
It matters in the first 3 weeks.
It does not matter. They're going to put the best baseball team on the field.
I fully believe
that. Damn the salaries.
What does matter, when I look at Tommy Malone, and he's the guy I think has the least chance of taking that number five spot, because if you look at his numbers, I mean, yes, he was terrible since coming to the Twins, but even if you look at his numbers with Oakland, when he was pitching away from the Oakland Coliseum, he was pretty terrible. He looked a lot more like what the Twins have been running out there for the last 4 years than he looked the guy who put up good numbers in Oakland. I mean, so I don't think that he really has the leg to stand on. I really hope the Twins find a way to flip either Malone or Pelfrey before the season starts, make some kind of low risk, low reward kind of trade, and just kind of open up another one of those spots.
Paul, he was like a run better ERA wise at home than on the road, but some of that is just home road splits that happened. He actually struck more guys out. He was better, almost as good as strikeouts per walk when he was on the road. You know what I mean? So some of that is explained away in just, you know, home and road splits. Everybody's going to generally have those. I mean, you look at what and certainly Oco Coliseum benefits pitchers more than a lot of other ballparks because they have more foul territory than probably half the stadiums combined in baseball. So everyone's going to have that. But his 4.48 that he had away from Oco Coliseum in his career, that's essentially what Kyle Gibson did last year. So it's not like he was as bad as he was with the Twins. But I think, and to get to maybe some Twins news and kind of make a bridge there to kind of get off of this I complain about everyone segment, essentially he could go into the bullpen and replace Anthony Swarzak, who walked away from the Twins this winter, signed a minor league deal with the Cleveland Indians this week with an invite to spring training. So Swarzak goes away. The Twins apparently tried to make him an offer, tried to find a way to bring him back. But Swarzak, I feel like he's a guy that wants to start. He's every year he's been given a chance to start and really hasn't done it. Maybe a change of scenery does him well. But Tommy Malone now I think could be a guy that could move into that role, or he could move into a role similar to what they've been doing with Brian Dunsing, you know, transition him into like that long relief, sometimes lefty starter, or sometimes, you know, middle relief left-hander type of guy. I mean, he's a guy that's done okay against lefties and righties, pretty similar stats except for the strikeout. So, I mean, he's a useful guy no matter how you use him. I think the Twins find a way to get him on the roster. I just don't think he's in the starting rotation at the beginning of the year, just like you, Paul.
So you're putting all your eggs in the Mike Pelfrey basket.
I think you better believe it.
I think we made a bet about this concerning some helmet nachos and a beer earlier. So,
yeah,
I hope you're wrong so that I can have those nachos and that cold beer in my mouth rather than paying to put it in yours.
You heard it here, the middle of January, Eric picking Mike Pelfrey as the number five starter over Trevor May. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Only on spring training. I think when you look at when we get to the end of 2015 and we look at who made the most starts, Trevor May has more than Pelfrey. He's going to have more than Tommy Malone. But to start the year, they're going to defer to the veterans. They're going to give him every opportunity to see what he can do. And if the rumors are true, if he really wasn't healthy last year, you know, Mike Pelfrey, 3 years ago before the Tommy John surgery, was a guy that a lot of Mets fans were pretty excited about.
Three years ago. That's a lifetime in baseball.
He wasn't even that great. He wasn't even that great before the surgery. I mean, we're not talking about some, like, you know, reclamation phenom here or something like that. Mike Pelfrey has been middle of the road all along. There's no way he's going to take...
We're talking about a guy who mysteriously went onto the DL with a groin injury that kept him kept him on the DL for the rest of the season? That's some kind of grind pull.
This guy hasn't given anything to the organization. I mean, he's been out there a handful of times. I mean, it was a bad signing. I disagreed with it from the beginning. He hasn't showed us a single damn thing. And if it was up to me, I would just swallow the cash and cut him. That's why I'm not an executive.
Well, and let's continue talking about some things going on the mound here. To switch gears from Mike Pelfrey to Twins great Johan Santana. We talked about this a little bit last week on the episode where he's making his debut in the Winter League. I'm curious to hear what Eric has to say about the Twins getting the band back together again. I mean, I think that if Johan can prove that he's healthy, I think the Twins should definitely make him an offer, because you might complain about the Twins getting everyone back together, but it can't be as bad as the Jason Bartlett experiment.
Yeah, I mean, Santana, cool. The reports were in the Winter League that he was throwing like in the high 80s, which is kind of where he was, I think, last year before the injury ended his season again. So he's at least back to a level where a couple of major league teams thought he was ready. The Mets thought that this is a guy that, or was it the Orioles thought this is a guy that maybe could help their team out last year. I don't know. I mean, I don't want the Twins to bring him back. I think for me, as just a fan of the Twins and nostalgia, the dream scenario is that he comes in and he pitches for the opposition and he starts like on a Saturday day game, like in June, when some of those beautiful June Minneapolis Sundays, the ballpark is filled with kids and parents, everyone's out of school, everyone's celebrating. He comes to the mound as the opponent, and maybe he pitches great and shuts the Twins out. He'll have that moment. It'll be exciting. It'll be fun for fans. Everybody will talk about it. We'll love it. But I think if the Twins think, you know, he can come back and pitch, it's going to be the Johan Santana misery tour, because nothing that Johan Santana can do now can match the memory that Twins fans have. And he's not part of the future. So any start that he gives is a start that you take away from Trevor May or Alex Meyer or, you know, Jose Berrios, who's a guy that could be up in the second half.
I don't think you bring in Santana to be a starter. I don't think that's what
you
should be looking
for.
You
don't bring him in for anything. You hope that he makes a team and he comes in and he plays against you and you have a great moment. That's the best case scenario with Johan Santana in Target Field. If he's wearing Casota Gold at any point in 2015, I'm against it. I'm against anyone wearing Casota Gold, but that's a different story.
I'm against it too. I mean, the guy's 35 years old. He hasn't pitched in like 3 years. Spots on the roster and in the rotation or in the bullpen all are very competitive right now. I mean, this was never a hard throwing guy. He had one pitch. I don't think the changeup at 35 is going to be effective at the major league level the way it was when he was 25. Who knows? You sign him for $2 million or whatever, and he gets hurt on the third day. Tears his Achilles tendon in spring training like he did last year. I think
that this is worth every dollar. The Twins, they brought back Torii Hunter. They brought back, you got to kick the tires on this one. And I don't see, Eric, maybe you see a lot of downside in this. I don't see the downside. We already talked about how the bullpen has a lot of questions. And if you could find a way to get Johan Santana and that changeup into the game, I want that. I want him out there. I want him in Casota Gold.
Paul, you're talking from the heart, my friend. You're talking from the heart.
But it's the middle of January. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, I don't know. The Twins have tried to get the band back together. Jason Kubel, how'd that work out?
Hey, that almost worked.
It worked out for a week. It was pretty exciting. Jay was excited for that first week of the season when he was loving the Jason Kubel, and then he turned back into Jason Kubel for a while.
Yeah.
So...
Not only do I not think the Twins will sign him, I don't think any major league club is going to sign Johan Santana.
I don't know.
He's going to pitch in spring training, guaranteed.
Maybe.
Somebody's going to. Hopefully it's somebody in the Grapefruit League that gives him a chance in spring training, and maybe he'll show up at Hammond County Stadium. Or what? Did they rename it with the reservation? Have they renamed that Twins Stadium down there? Did I hear that? It was going to be something ridiculous.
I believe that it has been renamed. I thought it was AT&T, but I don't know if that's... it's CenturyLink. Sports Complex.
Yeah. So, Paul, you know about CenturyLink. That's where the Seahawks play?
Yeah. That's correct. And that's who provides my wonderful internet service, because Comcast is the devil.
Comcast is the devil.
But anyway, as long as we're a little bit off topic here, I wanted to encourage any Twins fans out there who are struggling through this winter, staring out the window and waiting for the grass to grow and spring to sprung, go over to your iTunes, to your podcaster, to your Stitcher Radio, and check out the Talking Twins podcast. It seems every week now they've got an interesting interview on there. And most notably, I want to encourage you, they've got a trivia game going every week right now. I won the last 2 weeks in a row. I'm getting a Twins beer glass set. They're giving away a Twins cap this week. Just tweet them. You can tweet, you can email, you can go to their website. But check out the Talking Twins podcast. We had them on here, I think, a couple of months ago. But if you need something else to stick in your ear holes, I encourage you to give the Talking Twins a listen and try to win some free stuff.
Yeah, I like free stuff.
I like the Talking Twins podcast myself. You just gave me the motivation. I take the bus to and from work every day, so I'll plug them in tomorrow or a couple days or next week.
Before we transition away and go down the pond and all that, I just want to say, if you haven't got your tickets to Twins Fest and the Winter Meltdown yet, the Twins Daily is doing the Meltdown and Twins Fest over at Target Field. Get your tickets. I'm going to be there. Jay's going to be there. Everybody you know that writes about baseball and talks about baseball is going to be there. We're going to have a good time. We're going to drink a bunch of beers. Jay's going to wait in line and get a bunch of autographs, and I'm going to make fun of him. And it's going to be good. So we'll see you there. Paul's not coming this year. Something about being married and having a job. I don't know if you're into that kind of thing.
just so you know, at last year's Winter Meltdown, the two, you know, they have a raffle every year and they have some great prizes, you know, 10, 12, 15 different prizes. Anyway, the grand prize, if you guys remember, was a movie poster of Pelotero signed by Miguel Sano and the directors, and my wife won it. So
I'll have you know, by the time they got to the raffle last year, I was so drunk. I remember the beginning of the meltdown. I thought it was a lot of fun getting all those baseball personalities, all the bloggers and the interneters all together. But when I started doing the interviews, it was loud. There was chatting. I couldn't understand what was going on. So I commenced at that point drinking beer and talking baseball with whoever was near me. And it was worth the entry fee just for that alone.
Yeah, you're basically getting the most hardcore Twins fans and people that love the Twins the most and are internet savvy all together in one place. So it's like being on Twitter in real life. That's what it's like.
Last year they had Scott Erickson, who I had a nice little chat with. It was great to kind of pick his brain about, you know, years gone by. This year it's going to be Jock Jones will be in attendance. So that should be fun. Really looking forward to taking a selfie with Jock.
Yeah, Jock Jones, Tim Laudner, and then Dave St. Peter, the Twins president, is going to be there again this year. So they got a good lineup. It's good guys, you know, John Bonas, Seth Parker, Nick, all those guys. Aaron Gleeman will be there. So if you're into that, all the beat reporters will be there. Phil Miller should be there again. Mike Bernardino, Lavelle Neal. So all those type of media guys. Doogie Wolfson probably makes an appearance. So see all those Twins guys in person.
I am going to get drunk and tell Dave St. Peter what I really think about him.
Oh, boy.
Bring a microphone.
That's what I'm going to do.
All right, well, we'll step away from the mics. And when we come back, we'll review the roster, go down on the pond, and talk about the beers that are flowing like the waters on Lake Minnetonka. Well, I guess that's not true. Those waters are frozen. Next up on the Talk to Contact podcast, we're going to go back to the well with one of our winner segments here, reviewing the roster.
This has become world famous. Some guy from Germany emailed me, Tunisia, South Africa. They all want to know about reviewing the roster.
So this week we got a trifecta of players as per usual. We're going to take a look at AA turned Major League sensation Kenny Vargas, AAA turned Major League catastrophe for the future, Trevor May, and Ryan Pressly, who has quietly kept himself on the Twins roster for the better part of the last year and a half. So I think we should start in the bullpen with Ryan Pressly, then hit Trevor May and Kenny Vargas. So who would like to talk about Ryan Pressly?
The thing about Ryan Pressly is that we have 14 of them. Doesn't it feel like that? I mean, it seems like Ryan Pressly is the same guy as a Dunsing. I mean, I know, you know, from the other side, but you know, the same kind of Thielbar, Dunsing. They all kind of feel the same. Nothing really distinguishes them in my eyes. So while effective, and there's nothing wrong with them, it's just nothing exciting either. I feel
Ryan Pressly, despite being right-handed, which is the key difference, reminds me a lot of the bullpen version of Scott Diamond, right? So if you just look at his ERA, last year he had a 2.86. He
very
made 20, 25 very appearances. So that sounds pretty good.
Take it, yeah.
Then you start scrolling down. He's got a 3.14 whip, or a 1.34 whip, which is not good. He's given up almost, you know, one home run per nine, and he's only striking out four batters. He's got a 1.75 strikeout to walk ratio. So nothing in his peripherals tells you that it's going to be any good. His FIP is a 2.47, which is about a run and a half worse. So all the advanced stats just scream at you, not a guy. And yet what he did last year was in primarily almost all super low leverage innings. When the Twins were already losing by 7 or 100 or however it was after the third inning. This is a guy that when they got him in the Rule 5 draft 2 years ago, you know, maybe you plugged him in and tried to hang on to him as the Twins did in 2013. 2014, he pitched well enough to keep his spot, so they didn't get rid of him. But at some point, he's just not – his value as a player is not worth his value with the roster spot. And with some of a lot of these young arms that the Twins have been drafting, all these college pitchers that they drafted, especially all these college relievers the last couple of years – these guys are going to start showing up. They're major league ready. They're going to plow through this minor league system. They're going to be at AA, at AAA, knocking on the door. And Ryan Pressly is one of the first guys on the way out, if he even makes a roster coming out of camp.
I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, we saw him. He started last year with the Red Wings after spending all of 2013 with the Twins. And that was part of, I believe, it was the Rule 5 pickup. Is that correct?
Rule 5 from the Braves, right?
He got picked up, brought over, and I guess he pitched well in AAA while he was down there. I think he definitely earned his promotion back up to the big leagues, and as Eric said, he pitched well, but when you look a little bit closer, maybe he pitched more like a shiny turd than a shiny diamond.
Shine bright like a diamond!
And I've already said that I have concerns about this bullpen going into 2015, and I think if you can find an upgrade over a guy like Ryan Pressly, you pull the trigger because, like Eric said, I don't know that there's long-term value in continuing to run him out there from your bullpen because I don't think he can continue to get away without giving up runs the way he did last year or even in 2013 when he was stuck with the big league ball club. So as much as he's done, he was successful in his time with the Twins, I think it's time for the Twins to find a way to get better in the bullpen, and that means getting rid of Ryan Pressly.
So if you look at Ryan Pressly, so I talked about coming in low leverage situations. So he made 25 appearances last year. In 7 of those appearances, based on leverage index, were above average leverage situations. So that's when a game is close or late. So that means in 18 of the 25, it was below average leverage. And in, you know, almost 10 of those outings, the leverage was like the Twins were down by 3 or more runs, 8 runs, 9 runs, you know, at the end of the game when the Twins weren't going to have an opportunity to win. So, I mean, just didn't do anything almost ever. You know, I mean, not a guy that the Twins thought was valuable even when he was pitching in, you know, August and September. The Twins were long out of things. They didn't even give him an opportunity to say, here, let's stick you into a close game and see what might happen. They didn't even do that. They just said, you know, the game's out of hand. We want to save as much work as we can from our bullpen who we've already overworked. Just go out there, pitch, you know, 15 or 20 pitches, come back and earn your paycheck.
You know, part of the process with a young developing team on the rise is you got to have a little churn. We need some churn. And I think Ryan Pressly is going to get caught up in the churn.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep, and when you look at also worth noting, the Twins earlier this month signed Blaine Boyer to a minor league contract, another right-handed guy that's going to be in the mix. So when you start talking about all the right-handed arms that Molitor is going to have to choose from, we're looking at Ryan Pressly, Blaine Boyer, Michael Tonkin, Lester Oliveros. I mean, so there's a lot of other guys, and I think guys that maybe project a little bit better for 2015 stats, more upside. And so, as I said before, I think if the Twins find a way to leave spring training without Ryan Pressly, that'll be a better ball club than if they leave with him.
Sorry, Ryan. That's how we feel. We're going to give it to you like it is every single week, whether you like it or not. It may be tough to take sometimes. Ryan, I'm sure you're a great guy and a man of God, but you got to go.
Well, and don't forget Tim Stauffer, right? So he's coming in and he's stealing a bullpen role. So that means everyone not named Glenn Perkins and Casey Fien goes down a rung. And when you're Ryan Pressly, you're on one of those last two rungs in the bullpen. You know, you're not the long relief guy. So what you do as a right-handed pitcher, unless you're getting strikeouts, and 4.4 per 9 innings isn't getting strikeouts in today's bullpen, you got to be averaging 9 or more. You're just occupying a spot. You're dead weight. And, you know, it was cool when the Twins had 2 Pressleys on the team at one time.
That was cool.
That was the height of Pressly mania. But I tell you what, I would trade Ryan Pressly for Cleet Thomas 100 times in a row.
That's just because Cleet Thomas doesn't use batting gloves.
Yeah.
Part of it. That's part of it.
Okay, so next up, we've got Trevor May. We already talked about him a little bit earlier in the show.
I am jumping in here. I am sick. I mean, we are giving this guy New York City criticism and critique. He has done nothing but work his ass off, take the ball every time it's been given to him, bounce back after tough outings, pitch on a bad team. I don't know what else people want from Trevor May. He's learning. He's taken friendship with Phil Hughes, his closest friend on the team. They're sitting next to each other on the plane. What? He's staying out of trouble? What else do you want out of Trevor May?
What we want out of Trevor May is we want him to put the numbers up that he put in Rochester up in the big league.
And Why don't you give him a chance? Give him a chance.
Here, part of the problem, I think, when you look at Trevor May is there's been so much hype built around him and Alex Meyer. Fans have been waiting a long time hearing about these guys pitching in the high minors, just waiting and waiting for this to come to fruition. We got rid of Ben Revere, who was a fan favorite. We got rid of Denard Span, who was a fan favorite. And so while we've been waiting and Twins fans have been watching this terrible, terrible team out on the field at the major league level, they've been building expectations. And Trevor May, like many prospects, when he comes up, does not automatically become an all-star. Not everyone is Danny Santana. They don't just hit the ground running. And so fans, I think, and maybe rightfully so, have those expectations have crashed down to earth. But they still feel like they want to see Trevor May deliver the world because the Twins gave up a lot in those deals to get May and Meyer, and they want to see May succeed. And so they can't – I mean, Trevor May's first start in the big leagues was such a disappointment. It was so hard to watch as a fan. I mean, it hurt watching that. And I think that soured a lot of Twins fans, and so they need to see more games like that 10-strikeout game, games where he can pitch six innings, not walk a ton of guys, get those strikeouts, because that's what the Twins need more than anything is they need strikeouts. And if Trevor May can go out there, give him 6-plus on a consistent basis, strike out at least 8 guys. I mean, to impress Twins fans, you don't even have to strike out a ton of guys. You get 6 strikeouts in 6 innings of work, and the Twins fans are going to be ecstatic.
Yeah, well, and who knows what he's actually going to be, because, you know, he started 9 games last year. He had a mop-up duty in a game as well, so 10 appearances. But, you know, a 7.88 ERA after consistently posting ERAs around 4 or somewhere in that ballpark each of the last 3 or 4 years in the minor league. So, I mean, he's a guy that has a little bit of a track record. He's never going to be a superstar, but if he can just, like I said before, if he can just throw strikes, challenge batters, be confident with his stuff, I think he can be, you know, a 4 or 5 starter for many years. I mean, I don't know. He seems like a guy that could be a Jay Happ, right? I mean, a guy that you might have been excited about. And maybe I'm drawing a parallel here because Jay Happ came up with, you know, was with the Phillies as well when he was good too. But, you know, this is a guy you maybe get a little bit excited about. And if he can just settle into the back of the rotation guy, you know, this is a guy that can pitch for many years without being too exciting, but becomes a very valuable guy, especially when you're only paying him $500,000.
Right. He's cheap. He's young. He's nowhere near his ceiling. He's hungry.
He comes on our podcast.
He's willing to learn. I just think you have to give this kid some room to grow, back off a little bit, give him the number 5 starting rotation spot, make him work for it, you know, put a little fear in his pants, of course. But Trevor May, as a body of work, as a whole, from that debut Paul touched on to the last start of the season that he made when he struck out 10 guys, that is the growth that we look for and talk about from young players week after week.
Okay, I got a question for each of you.
And then when a guy exhibits this kind of growth and maturity and progression, you want to give his spot to Mike Pelfrey or Tommy Malone or something. Ridiculous. Absolutely.
I've got a question for each of you. It kind of forecast the 2015 season. Jay, I'll start with you. How many starts do you think Trevor May has when we're talking about the conclusion of the 2015 season?
30.
30 starts. Okay, I think that's a bit optimistic, but I like where you're going. Eric? What will his ERA be, and what will his strikeout per nine numbers be at the end of the season?
The ERA is going to be about 4.8, and his K per nine is, I think, is going to be 8.4. How about that?
Okay, I don't like the first number, but I'd be pretty happy if we saw the second number, 8.4 K per nine. I'd love to see that out of a Twins pitcher. So I think we should just take that rosy note and then move on. Stay with the positive energy there. And talk about Big Poppy Jr., the little Big Poppy?
Little Big Pop?
Kenny Vargas.
Is there still some type of unknown at whether he's going by Kenny or Kenny's?
I think he asked,
came up. He came up and he was Kenny's. Then he said he wanted to go by Kenny, and then probably for the last month of the season, it was still Kenny's on the FSN broadcast.
So I think
we'll find out.
I think it's he wanted to go by Kenny. So maybe we all just need to get on board with that.
I'm good with Kenny.
What about giving him a talk to contact nickname?
Little Big Poppy.
No, terrible. I disagree with any reference to Big Poppy related to the Twins, because we're going to hear about it 100 times this year. The Twins let Big Poppy get away.
His nickname doesn't matter. I mean, when the Twins were in September and going to visiting ballparks last year, the first thing people would ask Dick and Bert is about Kenny's Vargas. What's up with Vargas? Is he the real deal?
What about the Puerto Rican Rocket?
Okay, sure.
No, he's not fast.
Not fast at all.
But he hits balls like a rocket.
Eric,
I think that the Puerto Rican Tank would be better. Yeah.
What about the Kingslayer?
Listen, here's my very quick thoughts on Kenny's Vargas. He's going to be here for a long time. I think he's something special. I think he's a real deal. The dude can hit from both sides of the plate. He's undisciplined. He has too many strikeouts. He can't play really anywhere in the field regularly and with dependability. But I want Kenny Vargas on this team for years to come. I'm excited. He's one of the few Twins players that genuinely excite me heading into spring training. Arcia and Santana being the others. So I'm high on Vargas. I think a lot of people are high on Vargas. And you know what? The worst part about it is we could see a down 2015. I mean, we could see like a real dud here.
So, and I don't. In 54 games last year, he hit 9 home runs. If you extrapolate that number,
It felt like 19.
It did feel like a lot more than that. But if you extrapolate that out to a whole season, that looks like 27, which I think is probably unrealistic. It's unrealistic expectation for Vargas in 2015. But
would you take 22? Would you take 22 or 24 home runs?
Oh, 22, I think I push at 22. I think that's a great number.
Here's the deal. You're going to see gains from Vargas in the walk rate, right? Because all through the minor leagues, he walked – you know, around 10%, and then he came up last year and walked 5% in the big leagues. He's not a Josemil Pinto walk type of guy. He's going to do better than that. He can recognize pitches a lot better than that. Where you're going to see the big difference, what's going to really be the end-all and be-all of Kenny Vargas, I think, is going to be that strikeout rate. Can he make enough contact when he swings? Because we know when he hits the ball, it's like a Puerto Rican rocket, baby. But he just doesn't hit the damn ball enough, right? I mean, there's too many swings and misses. He does a pretty good job judging the strike zone. I think as he gets more and more major league plate appearances, that's not going to be an issue. But it's that contact rate, man. That is what scares me, is the contact rate.
Scares me too. But that's what all young power hitters deal with. Even old power hitters deal with that shit. It definitely worries me too, and the reason it worries me is because I think it could knock him out of the lineup. I think after 2-3 weeks, 6 weeks, a month and a half, whatever, of excessive strikeouts, he's going to get benched, and that's the last thing I want to see out of Vargas this year.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm excited about Kenny Vargas. I question whether he will start 2015 with the Twins roster. I feel like going after, when the season ended, I felt like Kenny Vargas was a lock to get that DH spot for 2015. I felt like he did enough to be up and stay. But as this winter drags on, and I start thinking about him getting plucked up from Double A, and I feel less and less certain that he is a lock to get that DH role. And while I still think he will ultimately come north with the Twins, I'm curious what the Twins would look like without Kenny Vargas, how that could change a roster, especially early in the season, and what that could mean for the Twins. So I don't know. I guess maybe I'm hoping that someone makes a statement or the Twins go out and sign someone so that maybe Kenny Vargas can start the year in AAA and then come up.
Vargas and Pinto are the same guy, right? I mean,
no, they're not the same guy. They're not the same guy at all.
As far as roster construction is concerned, they occupy the same spot.
Okay, that's different.
All Pinto right. could maybe catch every fifth day, but they're both DHs. They both have power. They both are going to swing and miss a ton. You know, I mean,
I think Vargas.
They're both DHs. That's their job, just to hit the baseball a long way and make more contact than they're doing right now.
I think Vargas is a way better hitter, and I think. If I were Molitor, which obviously I'm not, so take that. But I would put him in the lineup at DH, bat him number 7, and leave him in there for 3 months. Just put him in there. Let him learn on the job. He'll strike out a lot. He'll make some base running errors. You know, I mean, there'll be all kinds of growing pains. But I think for a guy like Vargas, especially given the taste that he got last year, you got to put him on the field and just let him learn on the job a little bit.
All right. I think his spot on the roster will be one of the exciting ones to watch in spring training. Yep. We've been talking almost an hour, more than an hour here. We haven't even got down in the pond yet. Let's go down in the pond. Let's do some beers. Let's sign off, and then we'll be back next week before Twins Fest to get a little funky.
The okay. word funky has made an appearance.
Well, then we'll just get right down to it. This week on Down on the Pond, we're going to take a look at Tyler Grimes. But before we do, I think this is a great point to stop and just give a plug for any of you who have not yet gone out and ordered your Minnesota Twins Prospect Handbook for this upcoming season. Cody Christie, Seth Stoes, and Jeremy Nygaard do a heck of a job. You've heard us talk about this book week after week. So go out and get yourself a copy so that you, when we're talking about these guys, you can read along with us. You can see what we're talking about and kind of do some research on your own. So Tyler Grimes is a catcher.
Hey, wait, let me tell you guys, on page 187 is maybe the best content you'll find in the entire book. So, Paul, why don't you flip to 187 in your book and just tell me what you see there.
Page 187, Building the 2017 Starting Rotation by our very own Erolf Pleiss.
So there you go. There I am in there. So, yeah, support the podcast. Support Cody. Support Seth and Jeremy. You know, I mean, these are the guys you're going to see him at the Meltdown, or you see him at Twins Fest. These are the guys that are making things happen on the blogosphere.
I have not supported Cody, Seth, or Jeremy. I did not get my Twins handbook, and I do not know anything about Mr. Grimes.
Okay, so Tyler Grimes is a shortstop / second baseman / catcher, which I think is a – quite an interesting combination. I think we saw him move behind the dish a little bit this year in 2014, but he's still playing all over the diamond on the infield.
Tyler Grimes has one of my favorite lines in the entire prospect handbook. So they write up all the prospects. And so you read through little snippets, you read their background, what they did last year, and then what they might do in the future. Here's what you have for Tyler Grimes. Upon signing, Grimes reported to Low A, where he struggled to hit for 3 seasons, but got hit by 30 pitches.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. So anyway, Tyler Grimes was picked up by the Twins, I believe, in the 2011 MLB Amateur Draft, 5th-round pick out of Wichita State University. He went to high school in Wichita, so hometown guy there going to Wichita, getting signed by the Twins.
And the shocker is Wichita State, that's a big-time baseball school. You might not recognize them if you're not very familiar with college baseball. They play in the Missouri Valley Conference. But they're
every year in, year out, the best team in the Missouri Valley Conference, and they're generally a threat to make it to the College World Series. So it's a big-time college baseball program. It's not like he was just a nobody and playing for a nobody school when you hear Wichita State.
Yeah, don't forget podcast favorite Mike Pelfrey from Wichita State. So a lot of good things going on there.
Go Shockers!
So Tyler Grimes was drafted by the Twins, and as Eric said, he struggled to hit. Struggled offensively. He's got a he's a 228 career minor league hitter. Moved up to Fort Myers to High A last season and continued to struggle both to hit the ball and to get on base. And I think his greatest advantage to staying in baseball right now is that versatility. He played catcher, second base, third base, left field, center field, right field, and DH last year for the Fort Myers Miracle. So definitely a guy who is able to move around, and I think that positional flexibility allows him to stay with the team. Now, and I don't know if that's going to be enough going forward. You know, if he can't hit the ball at single A, I mean, that doesn't bode well for him getting up to double A and ever even glimpsing a glimmer of hope for the Major League Baseball. So I don't know what we have in Tyler Grimes besides a super utility minor leaguer. And while that's a nice thing to have, I don't know that's something we need to spend a terrible amount of time on.
So, you know, Chris Herrmann and Tyler Grimes seem to me like a very similar player. Chris Herrmann is certainly a little bit better offensively, but Tyler Grimes is a little bit better of an athlete. But they're both guys who are probably a little bit miscast as catchers, don't really have a home, but they're positional flexibility allows them to have a long minor league career and move around in the system and always have a roster spot. And at some point, Grimes is going to move up through the system. And like Dan Rolfing, and you need catchers. You know, these are the guys that can stick around an organization for a long time. He's going to get a couple of cups of coffee, I would guess. I mean, this is going to be a guy that you're going to be familiar with. His athleticism is there. He's 5'10". He's a stocky guy. So, I mean, you're not getting... He's not a hulking, athlete-looking type of guy, you know. So, but he's going to be a guy that's going to be around for a while. But it's a good story to have that guy in the roster. He's a fun guy in the minor leaguers. You're going to see him, you know, in the future at Twins Fest events and that kind of thing.
The only thing I can argue with is I don't know how you could say that a guy who's going to be spending his fifth season at A-ball is going to get a couple of cups of coffee. That seems outrageous to me.
Well, he's not spending his fifth season at A-ball, right? I mean, he's going to be in Double A this year.
Based on what? He caught 43 games last year. He caught 19 games last year. So it's not like he's doing a ton of catching. So he's not getting that much experience behind the plate. He spent most of his time at second base. He can't hit. He can take a walk a little bit, but he doesn't hit enough to make that a useful skill. Why push him to Double A? And why, I have no idea how you're expecting him to get a couple of cups of coffee and be a guy that we need to actually concern ourselves with more than beyond this segment.
Listen, I just think he's a guy that's going to continue to stick around. And I think he's going to be a guy that the Twins will continue to attach, kind of like a handcuff to Stuart Turner. And as a Stuart Turner moves through the system, so goes Tyler Grimes. Okay. Stuart Turner is a guy you should be excited about as a Twins catcher. I mean, we've talked about him before. He's, you know, a guy that's going to make waves in this organization. He might be the next great hope at catcher that the Twins have. But they're going to pair those two guys together. They're both going to be at Double A to start 2015, if I had to guess.
Okay. Well, I guess we're going to have to bring on Sestos in the next couple of weeks and get his opinion on this.
For a self-professed pessimist, Eric certainly shining a bright light both on Grimes and Stewart here. The next great opening.
I get a boner for these minor league guys. I mean, they're just guys out there working hard. I want to see them in the system doing stuff. I don't know.
Okay.
I like them.
Next up.
All right, so next up, it's time to talk about those cold cervezas that I've seen you guys sipping on in your little Skype chats there. So what are you guys drinking?
Well, I'm drinking Deschutes, but not the scores.
So I'm drinking a Deschutes seasonal. It's the Deschutes Red Chair Northwest Pale Ale.
Oh, one of my favorites.
And I've never had this before. I've never even seen it before. And it looks good. It's got what appears to be a ski lift chair on the label of it.
Careful listeners of the podcast will remember that I've drank this on the podcast several times, waxing poetic about the deliciousness of this. And my brother now just feels like he's finding out about this beer for the first time.
Never I am finding out about it for the first time. When I was checking out at the guy at the register, he goes, "I wish they would make this beer all year long." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I never heard of it before." So, anyways, bready beers and red beers are kind of my two things that I like, and this fits in the red beer category, so I really enjoy it. Go out and get yourself some before it goes out of season again. Okay. Paul, what do you got?
What I got? I got a Nalgene bottle full of H2O that I'm drinking on right now. But I would like to report the good news that happened this past weekend is I finished the last wedding beer.
All right. Congratulations.
Pretty excited. I do have some new beers in the house. I have some Deschutes Red Chair Northwest Pale Ales. Like my brother, I've got the Deschutes, another one of their winter beers. But just hadn't cracked one open yet today, trying to be a little more responsible out here in Seattle. But
why are you being responsible?
Well, you know, I'm a grown man. That's what I got to do.
You're on a baseball podcast.
And what about you, Jay? What do you got?
Well, these have been only recently available for public consumption, so I'm excited to share with everybody tonight the glass-bottled XLCR. The XLCR.
Excelsior from Excelsior Brewing Company.
Yeah, man. I'm so proud of those guys over there. They started out literally in a garage in Excelsior. They bought like three buildings that surround them. They have a great facility over there. This weekend, they're going to have a fat tire bike race across Lake Minnetonka, and they're building a curling rink. I mean, they're building a curling rink at the brewery. And for anybody that wants to come down, you can sit down and have some great Excelsior Brewery beer.
Is this like where they got Lucid and all those other guys out there?
No. Lucid's in Minnetonka, and Surly is in Minneapolis. So Excelsior's it's pretty far west.
I thought that Lucid and like Badger Hill and Bad Weather and all those guys were like neighbors in the same building right over there in Excelsior.
Negative.
Negative. Okay.
It's 100% negative.
I would like the Excelsior Brewing Company. I've been to their brew pub there. It's got a great location right by the lake. It's got a real like just very homey, garagey kind of feel. Like it's a great place to go for a happy hour beer or to get your night kick off your night there, and then hit some of the bigger, more famous bars there on the lake. But it's a great place to go. And their XLCR is I've tasted it from the tap, but never in the bottle.
And now it's in the bottle, which that's why I'm so proud of those guys. I mean, it's available like retail now, like in six packs and stuff. So I'm drinking the XLCR, which I've had many times before. First time in a retail six pack, Excelsior Brewing Company. My boy John Click over there. Go check it out if you haven't been.
Okay. Excellent. Get on it.
I think that's
I'm just plugging in my power cord. We're done already?
We got to go around the league, but I don't know if there's anything really to talk about.
Fuck no. We're going around the league, baby.
I'm going to eat dinner.
I guess one move that we should give a little bit of attention to is the Evan Gattis trade. The Houston Astros sent a trio of prospects to the Braves in return for, I guess you call him catcher /DH/outfielder Evan Gattis. I think that's an interesting move for the Astros. You start looking at their lineup, and it's almost looking like they got a major league ball club.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if you're an Astro fan, There were some dark times there, but things are really starting to turn around with the projections for the Astros. They're bringing in players. I mean, they've got a lot of right-handed power on that team, probably more than anyone else in the league. So I don't think that you can just pencil in the Astros at the bottom of that AL West. It'll be a competitive division for sure, but I think the Astros, for the first time, could be finding their way out of the cellar.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the Astros for a while now. Love the Gattis trade. Quick story on Evan Gattis. Braves, Dodgers, playoff series. Gattis is actually in left field. Ball goes in there. He makes the catch for the third out right against the wall. And all the Dodger fans are yelling for the ball. Give me the ball, Evan, up here. Give me the ball. They've probably been giving him shit the whole game, but all of a sudden they want the ball, right? So anyway, Gattis doesn't throw the ball into the stands. So on the spot, I'm watching the game on TV. On the spot, I send out a tweet telling Gattis what a jerk he was for not throwing the ball into the stands, and I was going to dump a beer on him next time he came to Minnesota. The dude retweeted my tweet after the game. I got like 100 new followers, along with like 3 death threats. It was great.
Yeah, so no, now he's in Houston, now he's in the American League. He'll be coming to Target Field a lot more often.
And I'll have my chance to spill my beer on him.
You're going to have that chance.
But, you know, the Astros, I've been watching them for a while. You're going to hear names like Carlos Correa, who was drafted in the same draft as Buxton, or was it the Buxton draft or the Snow draft, or right around there, the Carlos Correa in Houston. He's going to be coming up. Add Gattis and Singleton. The Astros have some other serious pieces down there. Dexter Fowler, I've always been a fan of. So watch out for the Astros. I think the Astros are going to surprise a lot of people. I think that division's a little bit weak. And I think the Astros are going to be, I always put them in the same kind of pot as the Twins, you know, same kind of club, a lot of young prospects, so much more upside.
And ahead of the Twins, right? Ahead of the curve in every way.
That's what I was just going to say, Eric. The Astros are about 2 years ahead of the Twins.
Yeah, and I think there's one other trade that I believe it was Oakland. Who recently acquired Ben Zobrist and Yunel Escobar from the Rays, then sent Escobar over to the Nationals. So Oakland continues wheeling and dealing. So when we see the Oakland Athletics get down to spring training and then on opening day, we're going to be looking at an Oakland Athletics team that resembles nothing like the team we saw them put on the field last year on opening day. And every time that Billy Beane keeps making these trades, I cannot believe what's going on in Oakland. I mean, I feel like I was confused where it was going. I feel like they have a little bit of direction there, but he just keeps making moves. If you're an Oakland Athletics fan, at least the winter offseason, man, you don't even have time to get bored. You don't have time to wait for baseball because baseball's been going on all offseason long for you.
Oakland's an interesting case. I've been following some of the stuff that they've been doing out there, too. And don't forget that they did lose John Lester. We can talk about that signing as well. But, you know, the Athletics are minus John Lester heading into 2015. As Paul said, they've been very active. I got a feeling that Billy Beane is not done. Are they getting a new ballpark for sure? Has that been signed, sealed, and delivered? What's the status on the new ballpark?
TBD. Not sure. TBD, I think. They're not ready to build a ballpark because they still don't know if they want to even be the Oakland Athletics or the right. Southern California Athletics or however it works out with them.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, as echoing Paul, I mean, the A's are never to be underestimated. That somehow or other, they always seem to be there. They always seem to rattle off like a 14-game winning streak at some point during the season. Oakland's just one of those teams that I love to watch.
Okay, well, I think if anyone else doesn't have any,
I do want to talk quickly about the Lester signing. I mean, we didn't talk about it last week. It happened a couple days ago. But Lester to the Cubs on a long term deal. The Cubs also in the last week have signed Jason Mott from the Cardinals. So to shore up that bullpen. When you start looking around at the Cubs, I mean, they have really been active along with the pieces that have already been in place. The outfield concerns me. I'm looking at their roster now. It's highlighted by like Chris Coughlin, Junior Lake, and Ryan Sweeney. So the outfield for the Chicago Cubs is certainly a huge question mark. But when you start looking at guys like Rizzo and Ault, Castro, I'm a big fan of Wellington Castillo, and then the Cubs have been active. It's that former Red Sox GM. What the hell is the guy's name? It slips my name. Theo Epstein. Interesting to see what the Cubs will be doing this year.
Yeah, I think that the Cubs, like the Astros, have been on the right track for the last few years, and I think the Cubs, even more so than the Astros, are ready to start seeing those advancements happen at the big league ball club. And I don't think it's unreasonable to kind of expect or to allow yourself to get excited about what could be going on the north side of Chicago there with that Cubs ball club. And maybe this team is the beginning of the team that ends the curse in Chicago, that 100-plus-year World Series drought, excuse me. So I think that it's no longer laughable to think about the Cubs contending.
Yeah, and, you know, especially the Cardinals are old. The Pirates have been lucky. They rely a lot on McCutcheon. The Reds really disappointed me last year. But what I was getting is that division's up for grabs. I mean, there's no clear-cut favorite coming out of there. So just like everything else, man, day one of the regular season, the Cubs will be right in there. I think they're going to fight hard.
Okay. Fuck the Cubs.
Last chance for any alibis. We got to get out of here.
All right, let's get out of here, huh?
All right, well, thanks for sticking around if you were able to make it to the end. Thank you to our friends over at the Talking Twins podcast for sending me free stuff. And for your chance to get some free stuff, check them out at Talking Twins on the Twitter machine or give them a search on Google. You'll find their website. Thanks for Eric and Jay for joining me here. I'm the Baseball Pirate.
I'm E-Rolf Fleiss.
I'm J_Corn. Follow me on Twitter. Also, Red Current App, at Red Current App. That'd be great.
Okay, adios.
Go Hoyas. And soon enough you replied. You said that you were sick and scared and excited.
Dreams in our dreams.